Thank you so much for that beautiful song. Really good. Thank you. Beautiful harmonies. Yeah, that music, you know, the way people create music is pretty incredible. And the song we just sang as a congregation together by Daniel Namod, So That I May, God, I just, you know, every time we sing that song together, I think it can't possibly touch me anymore. And then it does touch me more. It's like it reaches into a place inside of me that just, I don't know what it does, but it just makes the fireworks start, you know? The tears start coming, and that feeling of deep consideration comes over me. And we were lucky enough, a few of us, to go see Daniel Namod at the Linwood Unity, probably a year ago or so. And he told the story about how he wrote, I believe it was the album that song is on, and that he, you know, I don't remember it exactly, but he needed to be alone and consider his life. So he went to some little town and rented a little house, and he said he just immersed himself, I think it was for several months at least, in considering what God was to him and what his life was. And he just said he had this thing that he just had to give to the world. And so I think about all that when I get touched by a song like that, to think how a human being gets deep into their own creativity and pulls that out, and that it can do something so much to each one of us. And then the daily word was comfort, and how much, it's almost like painful comfort a song like that can bring. I don't know why that is, but that thing of passion, that it's so wonderful and so strangely painful at the same time, but I think in a good way. So for our meditation today, what I'd like to do is settle in, of course, and get your body ready. And, you know, what does that mean for you, getting your body ready? Usually we go to the breath, because when you stop and take a moment for your breath, you take a moment for pure presence. You can't be fully aware of your breath and not present. So maybe take one of those nice cleansing inhales and exhales. And feel the release, the letting go. And then allow your heart to soften. Literally your shoulders and your shoulder blades open up. And the back of your heart opens along with it. And suddenly you have a sense that wasn't there before of the world behind you. And then you can feel your heart and your chest and your bones and your muscles open up in the front. And you can feel the world in front of you. And then to the left and to the right, completing the circle above and below, completing the torus. And the breath flows in the same rhythm. Like a great torus of divine love surrounding you, yet flowing through you and also into the world and all around the world. And then keeping that awareness, we come to the spiritual eye, the internal eye, however it is for you, and we start to consider God, our innate divinity. And we say simply, God, help me to empty my mind of all my distractions. So that I can come to you now. And help me to empty my heart of separation. So I can come to you now. Why am I here? And let me let go of all the false separations. And help me to empty my life of all the illusions that I have made. so that I can be with you here now. And from here, we feel that presence surrounding us and enfolding us. And maybe you too can feel the immense divine love that God is. God, help me to fill up my soul with ever deeper devotion so that I can fully know you and who I am. And now for a moment, if you'll join me, take a hand and place it on your heart, maybe your physical heart, or maybe you can see into the heart of your soul, and then your other hand over the top of that, if you're able to do that, if you have two hands. And if not, just imagine holding your heart, you holding your own heart, your adult holding your inner child, just for a moment to realize the presence of divine love. It is not possible to attend to this divine love within ourselves and not bless the world at the same time. So we make our declaration of interdependence, knowing that it takes each one of us to have our world be just what it is. And as we become one heart, we send that love into each other, that we may know that we're never alone and that all that we ever need is right here, right now. Thank you, God. Amen. If you're like me, I kind of want to just meditate for the rest of the day now, but I get so emotional with that song, and there's words between the words for me that do that thing. I don't know what it's called, but St. Francis talked about it. He said, go out and preach the gospel as much as possible, and if necessary, use words. In other words, your life is your gospel. Your life is your good news. Well, the world's changed again. Flipped upside down, inside out, and all that. And today, mindfulness is our topic. And for me, that meditation was very mindful because we're thinking about our divinity. But I've also been mostly insane lately. And my mind is like, we saw fireworks last night too, and my mind is like that right now. It's just going off all over the place. So I'm glad that I wrote some things down so I can maybe stay on track. I don't know how everybody else is feeling, but what weird times we're living in. And so mindfulness comes down for me. It's one of Jesus' simple teachings that we always talk about all around unity. And it's those two great commandments: to love God above all else with all of your heart and all of your mind and all of your soul, like Daniel Namad was talking about. and then to love your neighbor as yourself. But if we do the first one fully, we'll never need to do the second one, because it just happens. But, you know, that word God always pops up, and we wonder, at least a lot of times I do. You know, we hear God called all these names, and we adjust the name because it doesn't quite fit our conception of God. So sometimes I like to look at that as your true nature of being, and my true nature of being. So love God above all else. Well, love who you are above all else, the truth of you, because in there you know what it is. And I know that that's true because I know you, and I sit with you. And before the quarantine came and we sat together, there's those rare moments where we glimpse each other's soul, and that's the true nature of our being. It's where we know that we are connected in that way. And that is, to me, it's what seeing with the eyes of God is all about. And it makes me think of how that's thinking like Jesus thinks, when we see with the eyes of God. And, you know, Jesus, in all of the teachings of his, I was talking to a friend yesterday, and I said something about Jesus's teachings, and I said something about his teaching consciousness. My friend said, I think that's all Jesus ever taught. He sort of had that way of rising above worldly problems and yet showing you how in the world everything is consciousness. And that seems complex, but it's actually very simple. And to me, that's what mindfulness is just simplicity. This guy, Richard Rohr, who I've been talking about and reading some of, he says, if you don't live from within your own center of connection and communion with God, you'll go spinning around many other things. The true goal of all religion is to lead you back to the place where everything is one, to the experience of radical unity with all of humanity and all of creation, and hence to the experience of unity with God, who is the great includer of all else. So there's only one thing to do, always in any situation. But it's easy to become sidetracked and begin to go into that fear, that false separation, that human illusion, and start to think that what we see externally is real. And then I don't know about you, but that can really get me buggered up. And we start to separate ourselves, and we build little separation devices until the world is one giant separated thing. He says this interesting thing, and I like to quote other people saying this so I don't have to, because it sounds fairly political. So I'll just pin it on Richard Rohr. He says, the course we are on assures us of a predictable future of strained individualism, environmental destruction, severe competition as resources dwindle for a growing population, and perpetual war. This is not a pep talk. Our culture ingrains in us the belief that there isn't enough to go around, which determines most of our politics and spending. In the United States, there's never enough money for adequate healthcare, education, the arts, or even basic infrastructure. At the same time, the largest budget is always for what? War, bombs, and military gadgets. I hope we can all recognize how the tragic consequences of these decisions are being played out right now. And you guys who know me know that I talk about this all the time. There's that machine, whatever it is, but what brought it into being? Because at some point it just existed as an idea. What if we? Right now, as a world, we're being called to what if we did something radically different? And it seems like such a monumental thing to really consider change on the level that it needs to happen. And when I say needs to happen, it doesn't have to happen, but it needs to happen if we are to realize this true unity that we talk about, the kind of unity that brings tears from the center of my heart forward. You know, one time I always think about this. Every time I cry, I think about Tom, my first mentor guy. And I told him, I'm crying all the time, Tom. And he said, yeah, that's just the tears. It's just the ice around your heart melting. The more that I think about that, the more true it becomes. And when you think the iceberg is totally gone away, and then you cry a little bit more and you realize there's still some places where I'm frozen. But what am I frozen in? Isn't it really fear of separation? What would it be that would cause us as a nation, or even as a world, to invest in the kinds of things that Richard Rohr is talking about, when there's other things that, when we really take an honest look at it, are so much more important, really? And that's the kind of change that's being called for today. I don't know if it'll happen. And the freedom for me comes in realizing that all things live and move in God's good time, and it really doesn't matter what we do, except when you're in it, and then it really matters. So the inner guide imparts this wisdom that is entirely discerning in these ways. And then the truth is revealed in the midst of this great fear. And it sounds so simple, and the simplest things are the most dang difficult. Simple but not easy, they say. In fact, being a guy that's familiar with the 12 steps in the book Alcoholics Anonymous, there's a saying that I thought about this morning. And it says, if we are able to maintain a certain simple attitude, then things can really change. It's increasingly important to protect the environment which surrounds us in this way. You know, Jenny and I like to always talk about the energetic average, that you are the energetic average of the five people, or maybe sometimes I think places, that you hang out with the most, that you go around the most, that you allow into your mind and brain, or that you think about, contemplate. So when we talk about mindfulness, where is our mind? Where is it oriented, and how is it oriented? And like we fertilize a plant, when we put in more of something into our contemplations, we fertilize the thoughts that bring into being the very things that we're talking about. Somewhere, a bunch of people had to get together and decide what was important, and then convince a whole bunch of other people that that's where our energy needs to go, what you could call money, thoughts, focus. And then all of a sudden, this thing came into being, and we say, how did that happen? Well, we're all a part of it. Nobody's wrong or bad, but is that what we really want to have for life on our planet, on our beautiful, gorgeous planet? On our sunny summer Sunday, what life would you choose if you could choose any life? What would it be? Because you have that power within you. It's what denials and affirmations are all about. Everyone who practices meditation understands that cosmic presence that is eternal divine love. And that presence is actually the main driving force of all of life. Isn't that weird that you can use divine love to make a bomb? And does that even make sense to you? So if everything is out for our highest good, like we always talk about, I've had people tell me, I can't do the one presence, one power that's ultimately good when there's people that are perpetuating genocide. And I don't have an answer for that. The only thing I can say is that I know deep in the center of my being and my heart that God is good. And that the ultimate reality that we live in is always God. But it's just so weird. How do we get there? So I'm going to go to the Tao Te Ching again, because it popped up. You know, this whole thing about simplicity. What is simplicity in mindfulness, in the context of all the things that we're talking about? What is simplicity? I like to think a lot about the hippies who used to go down there when there was the war protests and stick the flower in the barrel of the gun. I don't know. Is anybody there? I think some of us were there. Anyway, the Tao Te Ching is called a book of wisdom. And you know, when you read the Tao Te Ching, they're really little short verses that really challenge everything about life and how we live, at least for me and many people who I know that really adhere to the teachings and the Tao. And they're not unlike unity teachings. They're not unlike most mystical teachings. The Tao is a way of simplicity, a way of honoring the natural flow of life, what's called the Great Way, which is actually what the Tao means. The Great Way. the great way that wants to unfold through us as the nature of our being. And many people are saying right now that to get to the place of to transcend the illusion of illness, that is only necessary to let the great way unfold through us as humanity. So the Tao Te Ching is said to be written by Lao Tzu, a Chinese fellow. Sometimes when I read it, I'm pretty sure it's a Chinese divine feminine, a woman of some sort, a female energy. But I don't know. Nobody really knows. Anyway, see why I'm glad I wrote things down today? Lao Tzu says, "Some say that my teaching is nonsense. Others call it lofty, but impractical. But to those who have looked inside themselves, this nonsense makes perfect sense. And to those who put it into practice, this loftiness has roots that go deep." I have just three things to teach: simplicity, patience, and compassion. These three are your greatest treasures. Simple in actions and in thoughts, you return to the source of being. Patient with both friends and enemies, you accord with the way things are. Compassionate toward yourself, you reconcile all beings in the world. Simple in actions and in thoughts, you return to the source of being. Patient with both friends and enemies, you accord with the way things are. Compassionate toward yourself, you reconcile all beings in the world. That's the whole thing there. And can you imagine taking that on as a challenge for your life? What if I could be that consciousness in the world? How would my life change? What would I have to let go of? And you can see now why that song meant so much to me when I'd already written these things down, because they're so interwoven, like all great truths in our world. So St. Francis has really been working with me lately in many ways. And St. Francis was this wonderful guy. Wonderful why? Well, he was, as I understand it, I don't know for sure if this is true, but he came from a very wealthy family, and he basically said, "No, thank you." I always think of the Monty Python movie. They said, the young guy, he's heir to the throne, and he said, "I don't want the castle. I don't want the gold. I just want to sing." He just wanted to sing. And that's much what St. Francis did. He said, "I don't want the riches. I want to be devoted to God. I just want to sing. I just want to give my heart and my soul in every way that I can to the invisible, to what is unsure, but that I know in my soul." And so St. Francis had a sort of a counterpart who was St. Clair. And I always like to notice, just like Jesus and Mary Magdalene, all great teachers, Charles and Myrtle Fillmore, people that come along and they do what St. Francis did, always there shows up the divine feminine counterpart to bring into balance the wholeness of being, to show the both sides of compassion, both sides of patience, and both sides of devotion, both sides of simplicity. Funny in conversation, you know, how differently a man and a woman might think, and yet somehow it gets completed in that, in the complete and utter difference in the way that the world is perceived. And St. Clair, the more that I learned about her, had a very similar story, in that she was in a wealthy place. I can't remember the name of the palace that she lived in. She had very wealthy parents who were going to marry her to somebody and perpetuate that whole thing. She said, "No, I will not go." And at very young age, she found St. Francis. She actually heard him preach. And when she found him, she said, "This is what I must do with my life." And she left. the palace, the riches, the gold, the sure material life for the unsure life in God that she knew in her heart was true. And she had these long, beautiful, flowing locks that any good potential husband would really like. And she cut them off. In fact, I think she let St. Francis cut them off. And her dad and her brother said, "Hell no, you won't." And they stormed into the friar's quarters or wherever it was. And there was an altar like this. And Claire clung to the altar. And she revealed her chopped hair. And her dad and her brothers went, "Oh!" And she said, "I won't leave here." And she didn't. And she took a vow of poverty. And that's the interesting thing. We think about poverty as impoverished, as having nothing. But poverty is simplicity. In its purest form. And when we take a vow of poverty, we're not saying I'll never have a good meal again. I'll never have a nice home to live in. But that I want to be simple. And worship only you. And know the truth of my being above all else. That's that paradox. To have everything, we have to give it away. I don't think in today's modern world it's as important to live in a monastery as it is to have a certain simple attitude of simplicity. I know I'm called towards that myself. I look around at my abundance and the things I have, and every new thing I get brings the walls a little closer. And every time I let something go, I expand a little bit more. So anyway, Claire and St. Francis, I have a picture that I found of these guys, and maybe you can see it a little bit. And look how they complete each other, if you can see that. And I can post this somewhere if you'd like. I don't know. I just get romantic about things like that. Sometimes I want to go to a monastery and cut my hair off and become a monk or a nun or whatever. Oh, you get to grow your hair at the monastery, Cindy says. You know, that St. Francis, one thing that a lot of people love about St. Francis is the picture of him with the deer and the bird and the nature all around him, the natural world that we're talking about, and all these different creatures that just come to him, and they just want to be in his presence, and he in theirs. And so last night we had we were visiting some friends, and we had our RV and took it out. We came home just about dark, and like Cindy said, our neighborhood was getting blown up real good, and it was really interesting. And so we unloaded the RV, and I drove it around the block to park it in our little parking area for it. And as I was going down this hill, and the fireworks are going off, and the moon's full, that big buck moon was just hanging in the sky. And in fact, we saw on the way home a buck deer, and then we saw the buck moon, and I thought that was pretty cool. But then when I was driving the RV back to park it, and I came to an intersection, and there was all these cars that normally aren't there, and they backlit this little creature that was running up the street, freaked out. And I thought it was a dog that had gotten out, and it was weaving and everything. And then it turned sideways and darted into the woods. And I saw that it was a little fuzzy baby deer. And I just did that too. I said, "Oh my God, look at that little tender little thing." And that deer represents to me this whole thing today. Compassion and kindness and presence and innocence and all those little things. And who knows where that little guy went, but I have a feeling he's still around, and I hope I can see him again. So the whole thing for today, if you want to take anything away, simple, patient, and kind to all of life. And everything unfolds from there. Thank you.